I'm calling the Hess meeting to order, and today is Tuesday, May 2nd. It is about 7 minutes after 3, and the lineup for today is, we have a confirmation, so we're going to do the confirmation first, then we will do Senate Bill 48, and then Senate Concurrent Resolution 28, and we're going to hear it but not act on it because it hasn't actually been referred to our committee, but we'll hear it so that we can know what it's all about so that when it does get here, we're ready. So let the record show that Representative Seaton, Representative Coring, Representative Cisna, and myself, Wilson, are present. And up for confirmation for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission is Mr. Jeff Hebert from Fairbanks. And are you online, Jeff? Oh. We'll wait 1 minute, and then if he comes on in the next minute, we'll go ahead and hear that, because I know he's probably took off some time for this. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to take a brief at ease right now. Brief at ease. And Mr. Jeff Hebert from Fairbanks, are you online now?
Yes, I am. I think fourth time was a charm there for getting online.
Okay. Well, we're very happy that you're willing to be in this position. And can you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us why you're interested in this?
Sure. I'll briefly tell you a little about myself. I've lived in Alaska since 1970. I'm a graduate of Lathrop High School here in Fairbanks, graduate of the University of Alaska Fairbanks with a Bachelor of Science in Physical Education, and I hold a master's degree in science and education. I've taught in the state for 15 years. My first 2 years of teaching were in a private school setting, and the last 13 years have been in the public school setting. I've always believed that as a professional, you have a duty and obligation to give back to your profession, to make your profession as strong as possible. And I just see that, if willing, an opportunity to serve on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission as service on my part to serve my profession.
That's absolutely wonderful. I wish more people thought that. So thank you very much. Representative Cisna has a question for you.
Certainly.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hebert. And I might say that my aide, Lucinda Folsom, worked with Mr. Hebert for some time and speaks nothing but highly of him. However, I will give you a really difficult question.
Okay.
and Mr. Hebert, considering that this is a health committee as well as education in the title, what would be your feelings about the connection of health with the educational programs?
Well, that's an interesting question, because if I look at the commission and the scope of the commission, as I understand it, its scope is related to code of conduct and the code of ethics for the teaching profession. Other than any situations that might be health-related, I'm not quite sure how that there is a relationship there. So if I'm missing your question, please correct me. But
Madam Chair, I may follow up. Yes. Mr. Hebert, I guess I'm looking at your background, and your background is working in physical education.
Absolutely.
And as I understand it, physical education kind of has as its principle that that if children aren't healthy, if they're not, if they don't aren't healthy in more than one way, they can't really learn.
Correct.
And that in fact our schools need to be thinking not only and the teachers need to model in a lot of ways the I would hope healthy attitudes and healthy habits.
Right. Yes, and I do believe that. And you know, I think one of the perspectives that I would offer the commission is, you know, not, as you say, not only am I a physical education teacher and I've taught health in the past, but I'm also a coach, so I have a perspective of expectations of professionalism as it relates to coaches as well as teachers. And I know that certainly the commission deals with coaches from time to time and their certifications. And so, yes, I agree with you from the standpoint of teachers have a professional responsibility to model good, healthy habits. I'm not sure if there's state statute that covers that or where that exactly would fall if there was a particular case that came before the commission. But I certainly agree with your sentiments.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeff.
You're welcome.
I don't see any other questions. What is the committee's wishes? Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I'd move that the Health, Education, and Social Service Committee has reviewed the qualifications for Jeffrey Hebert, for the governor's appointee to the Professional Teachers Practice Commission, and recommend that his name be forwarded to joint session for consideration.
Hearing no objection, so move. Thank you very much, Jeff, and good luck in the rest of the journey.
Yeah, and do you know what should I expect now?
You know what? Now probably there will be a I can't remember when we're going to have the joint session.
Thursday.
I think it's Thursday. And then the House and the Senate get together on the floor and all vote. So you'll find out by Thursday.
Okay, but as far as being available for conference calls, that won't be happening anymore.
I think we're done.
All right.
You were okayed in this committee, so that allows it to go right directly to the floor.
Sure. Well, I certainly appreciate your time, and I also appreciate that all of that you each do to serve the citizens of the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Jeff. We do have Representative Seaton has a question for you.
No, okay. I just wanted to clarify, Jeff, that I don't know if you've had your hearing on the Senate side yet.
Oh.
If you haven't had, there probably will be a confirmation hearing on the Senate side. So.
Okay, that's good to know, because I have not had one on the Senate side.
Sorry.
Okay.
So I forgot about the... We call them the dark side. I forgot.
I won't tell them you forgot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Okay, now we will go on to Senate Bill 48, and that is Senator Betty Davis, and she has her staff, Richard, with her, and you both will come forward and tell us about your bill.
Madam Chair, do you mind if I make a real brief comment?
Representative Corey?
I have a Senate State Affairs meeting in about 10 minutes I have to go to, and I would like to be a part of this, including voting on it if it comes to that. I do support the bill, and I'd like to be here for that, so if you need me, I will be in the Butcherovich room.
Okay.
But it's important that I be there. It's my priority bill, so I just wanted to explain why. I would like to be here as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is this just beginning, this bill?
Just beginning. We just did a confirmation.
I know that it's a busy time, and I really want to thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I'm glad that you do have a quorum so that we can conduct business. This particular piece of legislation has been around for quite some time. Actually, I brought it forth last session, which I didn't work on it enough, and I decided to bring it back this year after we had made a new CS, and this bill passed out of the House just in the last week, in the Senate last week. And I have prepared a package of information for your review, because there are some concerns by some people that this bill might cause some problem with them being able to do their job. And I think it's in front of all of you I'm going to let Richard go through the bill. It's very simple and brief. It wouldn't take that long to go through it and be ready for any questions or issues that you might want to discuss on it. And this bill is not to preclude anybody from doing this job or hinder them from doing the job, but also keeping in mind that we do want to be concerned about the needs of parents and children as well. And so this is a bill that has been taken up at the federal level. Some of it has already been implemented. This bill has been implemented in many states, and they have not had problems with this. And my bill is much simpler than many of the bills that I reviewed. And at this time, I'll let Richard, who's on my staff, give the overview of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For members of the committee, my name, for the record, is Richard Benavides. I'm staff to Senator Davis, who's a sponsor of Senate Bill 48. Now, in simplest terms, this bill basically states that the public school may not deny any student access to programs or services simply because the parent of the student has refused to place the student on a psychotropic medication or get a psychiatric evaluation or seek psychiatric or psychological treatment for that child. It also spells out what types of communications are allowed, who can do those evaluations, and the protections a parent or guardian has against being reported to OCS simply because they disagree with psychotropic medications. Now, we recognize that psychotropic medications are one of the many treatment interventions that may be used to address mental health problems. And many times, medication may be recommended and prescribed for children with mental, behavioral, or emotional symptoms when the potential benefits of treatment outweigh the risks. The U.S. Department of Education has clearly informed educators that medical professionals, not education professionals, are responsible for prescribing medication. However, the role of educators in providing information about a student's behavior is recognized as an aid to making such a diagnosis. The 2004 reauthorization of IDEA, Public Law 108-446, requires each state to prohibit state and school district personnel from requiring a child to obtain a prescription for a substance covered by the Controlled Substances Act, in this case a psychotropic, as a condition of attending school, receiving services, or receiving an evaluation for a disability. This prohibition does not prevent teachers or other school personnel from consulting or sharing classroom-based observations with parents or guardians about a student's academic or functional performance or behavior in the classroom or the school, or the need for an evaluation for special education or any kind of related services. We've adopted that stance here in Senate Bill 48 in order to clarify that public schools, teachers, and school district personnel may share those observations with a parent, may offer program options and other assistance to the parent, but they still may not compel any specific action by the parent or require that a student take medication. Essentially, the sponsor feels that any medical decision made to address a student's needs is a matter between the student's parent, and a competent health care professional chosen by the parent. And as in past versions, nothing in this particular CS precludes school personnel from using other means of dealing with behavioral problems, such as setting up a contract that says you can't go on field trips if you're constantly disrupting a class or giving rewards for any type of positive behavior. So we feel that the work that we've done on this bill up to this point has made this acceptable. We've had many conversations with OCS, the Department of Education, and others who have been interested in the bill through the couple of years that we've been dealing with this. So we feel at this point in time that we've got something that hopefully most everybody can live with. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
I follow most everything and I agree with it, where we're talking about not requiring the child to continue to take. But on page 1, line 8, we're talking about the school personnel may not recommend to a parent or guardian that a child take or continue to take a psychotropic drug. Can you explain to me how that, the effect of that within the
there's
classroom?
If you notice on line 7, it says school personnel may not unless otherwise authorized by law. Now, the people who are authorized by law are those who are certified. In your little packet, we have a certification there that says school psychologists and things of this nature. Those people have received a Type C certification that authorizes them to do just such things. Those are the people who are authorized to do them. What we're saying is we're restricting this from, and I don't like to use the term simple classroom teacher because there's no such thing, but we're restricting, let's say, the third grade teacher from making those kind of decisions because that's not their purview, that's not their training.
I want to pause a minute and let the record show that Representative Gatto and Representative Anderson have joined us. Okay, and it's in the on the second page of the packet that was on the desk. That tells you who has the special Type C certificate. So if you have any questions on that. Any other questions? Representative Gatto.
Thanks. Page 1, line 9. Take a psychotropic drug as a condition for attending a public school. Line 9, page 1.
Okay.
Where we talk about as a condition for attending public school. I don't think, you're going to have to correct me, school personnel can ever prevent, they have no authority to prevent a child from attending public school. In fact, I don't believe the principal can, and I'm not sure the superintendent can.
Prevent somebody from?
I believe that's up to the school board.
That's
for,
true.
For expulsion.
There is a way to do it, and we speak to that. Suspension, expulsions, but...
You're agreeing with us, in other words.
...recommendation what should happen. Our behavior management, talking with the parent, tell them, you know, what they have to do in order for their child to stay in school.
Well, I'm only trying to address what's written here, and that is... A school personnel may not recommend to a parent or guardian that a child take or continue to take psychotropic drugs as a condition for attending a public school.
Right.
And what I'm saying is, I'm not sure those two lines are informative in that that is already true.
That is true. That is already true. It is, in essence, it is. There are times in... When this was drafted, there are times in the language of the bill where things are repeated that are already a known entity. And so that's just a kind of a, if you will, that's the when things are drafted many times, things are repeated that are already in law and okay. Not made in, on purpose that way.
Follow-up, Representative Gatto.
And I do. I have a concern at least with that a child take, I can certainly appreciate that, to have a teacher recommending to a parent, I think your kids needs drugs. But for a child already taking drugs that may have interrupted the regimen and we are having a consequence, continue to take. For instance, if a teacher were to say, you know, she's been pretty good for a while, and you wanted to try to wean them away, which I believe they do on weekends and on holidays. If we're talking Ritalin, which would be a qualifier here.
Yes, that's true.
What I understand is that it's a prescription drug, and the recommendation is that you discontinue it on non-school days. And if a teacher were to say, it appears like we didn't take our medicine today, this prevents a teacher from saying, is it possible that we forgot or something like that? And I'm not sure that's a good idea, because the reason they're put on a drug such as Ritalin is to keep hyperactivity to a level where there is a learning environment, I think. I've been in the high school, I've been in the classrooms, married to someone in the classrooms. I know hundreds of teacher years of teachers, and the concern is that what we are doing is by legislation here saying, not really getting to the teacher level and saying, tell me what the positive and negative responses are. Do you typically get a kid that's not doing well in class and tell the mother, you know, your kid needs drugs? I've never heard of a single instance like that.
Representative, can I speak to that? And maybe you've never heard of it, but there's the possibility that those things have happened, and we know people have testified to that fact. So even though you say teachers don't do it or should not be doing it, it doesn't mean that they don't. And I'm not addressing that, but in the case where a child might be on drugs and the parent is not giving it to them like the doctor have recommended that they should take it, and a teacher or any other administrator in the school district should bring that to a parent's attention. They have the right to bring that to the parent's attention. And if they are continue to be negligent in it, OCS is the proper place to report neglect of children. And that would be neglectful in the sense that the parents are not doing what has been prescribed to them by the doctor that would be beneficial to that child. So there is a way to handle that.
And that is for, if I can continue.
Continue.
For the parent to contact OCS.
Oh, no. I said the school district, the teacher, so, the administrator, not the parent.
Okay,
so the
I'm
parent
sorry.
Would
I,
not.
I meant for the teacher, right. If the teacher is the one who observes a behavioral difficulty.
Or if you have principal, and they have the authority and the right, they have to report neglect or abuse anyway. So it's not taking anything away or adding any new responsibilities to their roles.
Why do I disagree so strongly? I mean, I think you are putting some very strong restrictions on the teacher who sees
as
the... Hold on, let me finish. Let me, with all due respect, I want to finish my sentence.
Okay.
What I have here is I have not observed or known of situations and do want to consider that the person in contact with the student should have a very significant say in what their observations are. And for them to be restricted from saying to a parent, listen, I want to help your child learn. And have you had instances where maybe he has gotten off of his normal regimen because he seems to be too active and is not learning? And that's where we're going here.
Representative what the bill says,
that.
It does not say that the teacher can't talk to the parent about it. It just says that the teacher can't tell the parent that the kid can't
they
come to school unless he's taken it.
That's an or in there. Cannot recommend to a parent that a child take or continue to take.
Yes.
So if a teacher were
as
to say...
As a condition, finish it. As a condition for attending school.
Well, I think we covered that earlier where they don't have that privilege anyway.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So...
So we're not changing anything.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, I'd just like to clarify with the sponsor. So this lines 8 and 9 does not say that a teacher can't recommend to a parent or guardian that the kid should take some drugs. It's just that they can't say, if your kid doesn't take drugs, you can't come to school.
Yes.
Is that?
That's right.
That's the way I read it. I just wanted to verify that that's your intention in this as well.
Yes.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have, I think, basically two questions. And on the first page, the part we've been discussing, what happens in rural schools where you may have one teacher, may have two, and how does that work?
Generally, as I understand, this is Richard Benavides. Generally, as I understand it, through the chair, Representative Sisna, as I understand it, in the rural schools, if indeed you're in a situation where you have one or two teachers, their level of responsibility is much higher than a school full of, you know, different people who have different forms of responsibility. So their authority would allow them to be able to do things that you would not normally necessarily do if you were just teaching, again, the third grade, let's say, in Anchorage. You'd have much more responsibility because of the fact that you'd probably be, for all intents and purposes, the special education teacher, for all intents and purposes, the principal, for all intents and purposes, the assistant principal, and all those things wrapped into one. So that's one of the things when we approached the bill, we knew that we had to make it a statewide thing as opposed to just a large urban district. So again, that's why the caveat or the catch-all phrase on line 7 on page 1 says, unless authorized by law, you usually have, or people who have positions of power in those smaller areas, they would have much more authority to be able to do things that you wouldn't necessarily do if you were a single teacher in a large urban district.
Go ahead, Representative
Seaton. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, whatever. Gray hair. Yeah. So, in other words, it'd be assumed they were a Type C special services just by virtue of the fact that there are limited number of people. So that would just sort of automatically happen. And then my follow up question. I mean, you could nod. Yeah, okay, good. For the record, he nodded. And my second question would be on page 2, lines 4 through 7, can you explain how that works? Because, of course, teachers are the front line of defense sometimes in terms of pinpointing abuses for kids.
This was vetted through through the chair's representative system. This was vetted through the folks down at OCS, specifically when the bill was first drafted, and they thought this was the best way to handle this. Essentially, if indeed you have a situation where you want to pick up the phone and call OCS, going back again merely because of the fact that you think the child should be taking a drug, and you feel that if they're not taking a drug, I'm going to report the parent because I think he's something's wrong with him. Well, you can't do it solely for that one purpose. However, in a scenario that you describe where there's things occurring and you can see that something's happening, not only do you have the right to do that, but according to the statute, it's your obligation to make that report. And so that was put in there in order to make certain that we clarified the fact that, yes, you still have to follow those rules, and yes, you still can report them, as long as it's not merely just that one sole reason.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Seaton?
Thank you.
And then Anderson next.
Oh.
Emma. You go first, then Anderson.
Okay. I was reading in the backup paperwork about the Type C special certificates and what that is, but I just haven't been able to find it in the bill where that certificate, the correlation of where that is in the bill.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, again, that was my catch-all phrase on page 17, unless authorized by law. I knew that we had behavioral specialists, and I knew that we had mental health professionals within the state. I learned through the process that we also had people who are certified by the state, i.e. the people who get the Type C certificates. But if you look in the statutes, there's not a specific thing that says it's certified by the state. So I had to go back to utilizing the term authorized by law. They're authorized by law to do these things because they're certified within the Type C certificate.
Okay, and
follow-up, Representative
Seaton. And I guess I'm trying to figure out which authorization by law, if you have a single teacher or a two-teacher school, how, if they don't have this Type C certificate, how they're authorized by law.
It could be, excuse me, and this is Senator Davis speaking to the question. There are several ways that it could be handled, but the school board, there is a school board that would be, even if it's a regional board or a local board or whatever they might have, they set policies, and they, because you only have that one person in the school, they might have that individual acting as the superintendent or the principal, the teacher, doing a variety of things, and therefore maybe their policy will speak to that, so therefore would authorize them. Is it in statute saying that they can do that? No, I don't know anywhere in the statute, but we do have the legal person online, I think, that wrote this bill for us.
Okay. And follow up,
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. So just to get it on the record then, so the intent of the sponsor is that if a school board policy authorizes a teacher in a single or two or a small school, then that authorization is within the school board policy, suffices for the condition that you've set out on line 7.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's right. Okay.
And we will, Jean Michelle is online, and I'll get to her real quick. I want to see what Representative Anderson questions he has so that they'll know maybe how to respond. So we'll see what Representative Anderson has to say.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Richard and Senator Davis, two questions. One, and I'm sorry I was late, I caught half of your presentation, and we've talked in advance of the bill presentation yesterday. What I didn't ask in yesterday's meeting, nor heard today, was the impetus, I think Representative Gatto is getting at duplicity. And I know you say, hey, sometimes that happens. We try not to make that happen. I know in House Judiciary we make sure that there's not that there's not either inconsistencies or replication of language, and I think that's what you meant. A majority of page one, and you don't have to answer, but we'll get to you. But just only in that, because I know it is. That the page one, you're saying if one through four is already in law, then why are we repeating it? But to that end, just briefly, what is the inherent problem that you see in the need for the legislation? And I would just throw out, is it that you see teachers, you know, out of the side of their mouth, off the cuff, in the teacher's lounge, to the parent, to other students, saying, hey, you're so hyper, you need to be on Ritalin, Anderson, and you feel that's wrong? Or is it that you see people saying, hey, I'm not on Ritalin and I'm not going to get on it. Don't bully me. Let's bring up my bully bill. Or the other one would be, the other scenario would be that maybe the teacher says, hey, in a teacher conference, little Jimmy's so hyper, I recommend Ritalin. Are these the areas where you think that need to be circumvented, and do you feel that's what's happening, hence the legislation?
Madam Chair and to Representative Anderson, Senator Davis speaking. This bill was not meant to cast dispersions on anyone. And I'm not going to say that teachers are doing this in generalities, but I'm not going to say that it's not being done. But I do know that we need to have some protection, because there are many parents and other concerned community people that are reporting that they are being required to put their children on psychotropic drugs in order to go to school or to continue in school. And I don't want to address that issue saying, no, it's not true, or that it is true, because we know that there is cases where that has happened. Okay. But the reason we have the bill is for the clarification. Yes, you may do your job and you may do an evaluation. You may say to a parent, these are the concerns that we have. Here's a list of people that would be recommended, and not give them any particular one that they would have to go to in order that might be able to help you. And so that it would be right there in writing so that parents can say, I have this protection. I do not have to put my child on psychotropic drugs, just in order to bring them to school.
Okay.
And then it might be agreed that they will do that, but it should not be a requirement.
And I appreciate
that. And that's all I'm trying to bring out in the bill.
And just super quick follow-up, two questions.
Follow-up.
Madam Chair, follow-up is the second last question. Page 3, line 29 through 31, it talks about violations. A violation of the new sections 1431.71 through 176 constitute substantial noncompliance with the school law of the state for purposes of dismissal of a teacher. Does that mean that if under page 2, lines 18 through 24, where you say, hey, communication is allowed, but school personnel cannot make assertions or recommendations that violate the, you know, prevention of recommending psychotropic drugs, or B, denigrate, criticize, punish, or attempt to denigrate, criticize, or punish a parent, guardian, hey, you know, Bill and Linda, you know, little Billy really is off the walls. And have you ever considered at least maybe seeing a pediatrician about some level of drug? And I'm not recommending it, but whoa, what did you say, Teacher X? I'm turning you in. Personnel says, oh, Davis's bill passed. Bye. You're fired. Based on 1431.77. Sounds funny, but I mean, that's what it kind of said.
This is Richard Benavides again, through the chair, Representative Anderson. There, if you look at the Alaska Teachers Practices, I believe it's called, I don't recall the exact name, there are lots of different things that rise to the level of this same punishment. And many of those things have been done. But that doesn't mean that you're automatically going to get fired. You might be brought, you're going to, let's put it this way, your principal is going to have a talking to you. I know that the way they do things in Anchorage is the principal tries to handle it at the school level. And if indeed it's a continuing problem, or it's deemed that this person is just a mistake, certainly they can go to another level. But just because that's in there, that doesn't mean automatically that those things are going to occur.
Thanks.
Representative Sisson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Davis, you mentioned something that actually I had wondered about, and that was the list of community resources. I know when I went to look at what kind of things I could do to work with kids, and I was looking at possible educational programs, and I talked to several psychologists, I got given a list of people who did not work with kids and a list of people who did. And it was a very small list of psychologists in Anchorage that actually did counseling for children. So to be given a list of all the psychologists in Anchorage, for instance, if we're talking about in the schools with Anchorage, and you're just given that list, that would be, it would be really difficult. The parent might actually make appointments with people who don't like working with kids or who aren't good with kids. And I kind of worry about that on this.
Madam Chair, and to you, Representative, what I would say to that, you're right, there's probably not that many, and there are ones that work with children and ones that work with adults. And when I say give them a list, it doesn't mean that you have to give a list of all, but I would think that the school district would know who they have. In fact, they might even have people on staff that they can refer children to for psychologicals to be done, evaluations to be done, or other personnel that they have worked with. And so they would limit to the list. They wouldn't just give them a list and say, you go about it and do whatever you need to do.
Okay.
I would think that the school district would be able to at least help out in that way.
Okay.
And if I may, Madam Chair, Representative Sisson, that is in the bill, it's a may, not a shall. So if the school district or determines that, well, they don't want to do that, they don't have to. And so, and obviously they would control that list, so whoever they put on there would be whoever they put on there.
All right. Thank you. Perfect.
Any other questions? Representative Gatto?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just as an example, I believe the reauthorization of the Education Act that we call No Child Left Behind allows for children, not allows, but requires for children to be placed in the least restrictive environment. In many cases, that's the classroom. Now, those are rights that the parent has that will be in the least restrictive environment. The bill does not give the parents responsibilities, just the rights. So we can have a parent who has knows their rights, and that is they've got a troubled child. They do. And he's not learning, but they're not paying that much attention. It's easier to blame the teacher than yourself. Mm-hmm. I do it myself, so the responsibilities are that if the teacher in the classroom says it is so troublesome for 13 or 20 other students when, and we always call him Little Johnny, so I'll repeat Little Johnny, acts out some of his wishes, thoughts, and desires. And so let me just take a minute and explain terrible situations as they were described to me. Johnny walks over to the light switch and turns out the light. Teacher says, Johnny, turn the light back on. Johnny won't do it. She walks over to Johnny. Johnny runs and dives across a desk, pretty much clearing off the desk. And when you try to catch him, he shoves other desks and then hits another kid. And we have an out of control youngster. Now, in this case, would a teacher not be allowed to recommend to the mother that perhaps you might want to look into this behavior because there are certain medications, drugs, that can help tone him down so he would fit better into an environment and not disrupt. He'd be able to learn himself and not disrupt it. Would your bill prevent a teacher from saying, look what just happened, can I make this recommendation without getting in trouble for making the recommendation?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, again, you have the right to have a parent-teacher conference to bring those things up. Where you're crossing the line, if you will, in your example, is the medication thing. Now, you can certainly say, the thing you would, my assumption would be, and I could be totally wrong on this, is that you recommend that the child be evaluated to see what kind of things would assist this child in bringing on their, bringing their behavior into compliance with what would be considered to be acceptable. So that's still allowable. That wouldn't do that. And of course, no state law can, you know, any kind of federal law supersedes a state law. And also within the context of Section 14 of the statutes, there is a section that deals with grounds for suspension or denial of admission. And the school board, if they feel that there's a behavior or continued willful disobedience or physical or mental condition that in the, you know, opinion of a competent medical authority, which you would probably, if the kid is going to be that much of a problem, you're going to see evaluation. You're finding that the evaluation is finding that there's something going on here. There are ways to, a school district has the right to deny admission to a child or to suspend a child for those kind of things. And then once that occurs, of course, there's a whole litany of things that occur once you suspend a child from school.
Madam Chair, and also to Representative Gatto, did you see the in your package that I had listed in there grounds for suspension or denial of admission, also readmission? It speaks to that. And no one is precluded from doing that in my bill.
And what I'd like to do is go to online and talk to Jean Michelle and see what she has to say. So let's get some testimony out of the line, and that might answer some of the questions. So, Jean, are you online?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Can you tell us exactly from listening and what the questions that were asked, exactly what does this bill do and not do compared to the questions that we were asked? Because some of the questions were asked, can a teacher talk to a parent about this? Can you just go ahead and tell us so that we have really a ballpark figure of exactly what's going on here?
Okay. The obvious restrictions in the bill, the prohibited actions, are in the first section there. And the references to school personnel, which includes teachers, they're prohibited from recommending to a parent or guardian. You can read the list there. That a child take or continue to take a psychotropic drug or require that a child take or continue to take a psychotropic drug as a condition for attending public school. They can't recommend a specific licensee or health or other health specialist to a parent or guardian for a child. And they cannot conduct a psychiatric or behavioral health evaluation of a child, and that would include a school psychologist. The paragraph 5 on page 2 also prohibits school personnel from recommending that a parent or guardian seek or use for a child a psychotropic medication or treatment. That's paragraph 5 is irrespective of the condition for attending public school requirement in the earlier paragraphs. And school personnel are prohibited from making a report of child abuse or neglect based solely on the fact that a parent or guardian refuses consent for the administration of a psychotropic drug, psychiatric, psychological, or behavioral treatment of the child, or an evaluation of the child. There is a provision on page 2, lines 28 and 29, that exempts the mandatory reporting statute 4717020 for child abuse or neglect from the prohibitions in the new section 1431.71. So there's there's a fine line there in terms of mandatory reporting. It's and it would only, this prohibition in paragraph 6 earlier on page 2 would only prohibit the report in the instance that a teacher acts or reacts quickly based solely on a refusal of consent and not on any other information such as behavioral observations of the child. So it's a very limited circumstance there. The not, unless otherwise authorized by law proviso on page 1, line 7, is being read by the sponsor and I think by some of the committee members very broadly. If the intention there is to authorize school psychologists or type C personnel or personnel acting under a school board policy, I would suggest clarifying that language in an amendment just to include school board policy and specifically trained personnel. And that the reason normally a court won't construe a policy as a law, and I think that that term may be ambiguous if it's being read to include school board policies. The other, I think, confusion is the probably maybe as a result of the page 2, lines 30 and 31, compliance with federal education law. If we're including type C certificated personnel, or I should say excluding them from the prohibited actions, then it's a bit confusing to prohibit behavioral or mental health professionals that are defined specifically to exclude teachers in this bill, to prohibit them from requiring psychiatric or behavioral health evaluations of a child. It allows them to recommend for purposes of federal compliance, but not require an evaluation. And recommend, but not require treatment for the child. The, under the federal Individuals with Disabilities Act, there is already a requirement under federal law that parents consent to those types of evaluations for placement of a child. So the practical effect of prohibiting behavioral mental health professionals for other than compliance with federal law for recommending treatment might be to keep type C personnel or other school psychology professionals from recommending these things, unless it's only for the purpose of federal education law. There may be another way to read that, but I think the violations are pretty self-explanatory. And the definitions are as well. I think the other confusion I'm hearing in the committee discussion is about the suspension or denial of admission, and it does, existing law AS 1430.045 isn't exactly redundant of what this bill does. It allows a school-aged child to be suspended or denied admission to a school for a physical or mental condition that, in the opinion of a competent medical authority, will cause the attendance of the child to be inimical to the welfare of the other pupils. That, I'm not sure how in practice that language is applied, but obviously it anticipates that there be some kind of psychological or behavioral health evaluation of the child. So,
Jean?
Yes.
It appears to me that that our federal law mm-hmm. already makes sure this is taken care of for special ed children. But the federal law already states that. I'm looking at it right now, and it's the end of 2 U.S.C. 1412 state eligibility, and it, in that, under 25, it says prohibition on mandatory medication, and then it says A, in general, the state educational agency shall prohibit the state and local educational agency personnel from requiring a child to obtain a prescription for a substance covered by the Controlled Substances Act as a condition of attending school.
Mm-hmm.
Receiving an evaluation under subsection A or C, and it goes on a little bit further. But so I think probably special education children are already covered under that. Now, maybe regular children aren't. Am I thinking correctly, or am I kind of going up the wrong tree here?
Madam Chair, you're not. It's not inaccurate. It's 20 U.S.C. 1425, not 2 U.S.C. But the what that federal law does is require the states to adopt a policy or law or regulation that prohibits that. The federal government doesn't directly regulate the behavior in our schools other than to pull funding if we don't have a consistent provision. So that's not redundant at all.
Okay. So I guess my question is, then what does our state law say? Because I'm sure that I know, especially with special ed kids, there's mm-hmm. all kinds of very strict rules and regulations that have to be followed, and parents have to sign things, and they have to have an IEP, and there's all kinds of things that have to be involved. So,
So
our state law probably already says that, but now I don't know if that's just for special ed kids or if it's for all kids. Can you answer that?
Yes, the state law requires, the way the state law handles that is that it requires parental consent before anything is recommended, and that's in statute. There is no general provision like this bill is proposing that would apply to all children other than kids who are being evaluated for placement purposes.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Seaton has a question.
I have a question. I thought I was comfortable with everything where we had as a condition of attending public school, but then on, as you pointed out on page 2, lines 1 through 3, are we basically saying, I guess this is a question for you, that they can't even recommend to a parent or a guardian that they think about doing that? I mean, that's the way I'm reading it. I mean, I didn't have any.
Yes, I think the only nuance here is it's not the through the chair, the Representative Seaton, the page 2, line 1 doesn't refer to continued use. So this reads as a new use of a psychotropic medication, so it wouldn't address or it wouldn't prohibit the discussion of a kid who forgot his medication or something like that. I think that was brought up earlier. But the proviso on page 1, line 7, unless otherwise authorized by law, does apply. And there is some authority for school boards to adopt policies when there's a weapons violation and a suspension of a student. And whether there's a reason for denial of admission and or a suspension that anticipates a mental health evaluation in 1430.045. And 1430.047 also requires a student. It doesn't allow for somebody like a teacher or a principal to require it, but it requires a student to bring psychological evidence that the student's safe to re-enter school after being suspended. Does that answer your question?
A follow-up, Representative?
No, no, it doesn't. I guess I'm looking at lines one here, and it says that, you know, basically someone other than a Class C, than a, well, than somebody in law, that's provided in law, that basically a teacher is prevented from recommending that a parent or guardian seek or use for a child a psychotropic medication. So we're, and this has nothing to do with the condition of continuing attendance in school. They couldn't even suggest in a parent-teacher conference that someone needs to, you know, that that might be something they need to look at. Is that the way I'm reading this?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's generally true, except you have on starting on line 12 on page 2, it doesn't prohibit school personnel from sharing classroom-based observations as long as they're not recommending psychotropic medications or psychological treatment. They can share the observations with the parent. There may be an implication, but the bill prohibits the express recommendation.
Representative Sisman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Jean Michelle, could you tell me if the former discussion that you had with Representative Seaton would be aided by the suggestion you made that in online 7, page 1, you added at the end of unless authorized by law, otherwise authorized by law, comma, or provided for by school board policy and or by specifically trained personnel. Would that help that issue? Would it provide for specific people, maybe not the teacher, and in the case of a small school, it would be a specifically trained personnel that was perhaps given a guidance through the policy of a school board to make recommendations. Would that ease that problem?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, that if you added school board policy, it would open that up to school board discretion, but that's a policy call on your part, whether...
No. You don't like it?
Let's Representative Seaton.
I didn't understand. Did the sponsor say that you...
She said, excuse me, Representative Seaton, you speaking to me?
Yes. I didn't quite understand whether you were supportive of putting school board policy in that, clarifying it, or you were opposing.
When she said would it open it up to their discretion, then this would pretty much not... You could say they didn't have to carry out the bill at all if it just opened it up to their discretion. That's what the legal person just said.
But, okay, follow-up, Representative Seaton.
But if it was school board policy, I mean, I thought that that's what...
No problem with the part about school board policies be set by school boards, because that's what they do. And as long as they're not in violation to the statute that we're trying to put in, that's not a problem. And it doesn't have to be in here, because I say that's an automatic. If they're not going to go, if they can't resolve it at the principal level or the superintendent level or whatever, that's what school boards are for, to set policies that can be used by the districts.
Let's go to the testimony online, yeah. and then maybe that will give us some information. So I'll go to Fairbanks first. Frank Turney.
Yes, can you hear me?
We can.
Yes, representing Peggy Wilson, chair, and vice chair Paul Seaton, and representing members of the HES committee. Excuse me. Once again, I'd like to thank Senator Betty Davis and Chief of Staff Richard Benavides for bringing this important bill forward. I sent you copies to the HES, a letter from Senator Lisa Murkowski regarding prohibition on mandatory medication. Also, two support resolutions supporting Senate Bill 48. One was introduced by former Assembly Bonnie Williams and passed by the North Star Borough Assembly on April 14th of last year. In a recent resolution introduced by City Councilman Lloyd Hilling and passed by the City Council on April 10th, resolution number 4208 by Mr. Hilling is a teacher and teaches economic and has taught middle school. And he told me to apologize for the committee. He's been employed in the North Slope, so he couldn't be here at this hearing today. But he's observed these children for many years becoming hyper and then becoming passive. And his resolution, a resolution in support of Senate Bill 48, which would prohibit school personnel from recommending or requiring prescription or psychiatric drugs to school children. Also, I sent you a copy of a recent Newsminer article by Chris Eshelman. I believe Senate Bill 48 is a start in the right direction as far as prohibiting teachers and untrained school personnel from recommending to a parent that your child might need Ritalin or an ADD evaluation before a child can attend school. Even though it doesn't cover all the bases to protect the child from teachers in school, psychologists and psychiatrists who could be misdiagnosing the child that could have other problems that mimic ADHD, like maybe allergies or hearing problems, or the child might need a neurologist or maybe need a nutrition. And also, many doctors in the field of working with children claim that ADHD caused by chemical imbalance of the brain has not been proven. And the documents show that it has not been proven. And the big question to many psychiatrists and psychologists in the field that are really concerned about children, are ADHD drugs like Ritalin harmful or not harmful? The DEA, Drug Administration, the DEA has Ritalin methenidate, which is a speed, is a Schedule II drug, right along with cocaine because of its dependence and addiction. And doctors have proven that the short-term and long-term of ADHD drugs can cause serious heart problems and death, along with suicidal thoughts, which the FDA has recently approved to place the black box label on all antidepressant drugs because suicidal tendencies of children. Now, I'll sum it up. Regarding Senate Bill 48, I've done a lot of research over the past 15 years, thanks to the Citizens Commission on Human Rights for exposing psychiatric abuse amongst children and adults, and Dr. Peter Briggin, one of the foremost psychiatrists in the country and the author of the book Talking Back into Ritalin, and a national website, RitalinDeath.com, who I sent that website to the HES committee. And I have read many editorials, and the conclusion is the stepping stone of drugging child with ADHD drugs generally comes from a school teacher or an untrained school personnel recommending to a parent that little Johnny might need to take a drug or have an ADHD evaluation to attend school. Most all this information is coming from teachers and school personnel. Now, I believe that I hope this bill passes through the HES committee. I believe this bill needs to be chiseled in stone. And also, you mentioned the psychologists and psychiatrists. My question is, and this is a long concern, not just mine, but many family members who probably wouldn't come here because they're embarrassed about some of the children may have a mental health problem, may not have a mental health. Does the state of Alaska schools hire psychologists and psychiatrists to support ADHD evaluations, support the use of drugs, is a real concern, because I'll tell you why. North Star School District, Dr. Short, and our school district here, has two different occasions, has funded a psychologist from another state to speak to teachers how to spot ADHD in the classroom. That's a real concern, Ron. And I attended the seminar that was in the school district main office. Of course, I wasn't invited. And the psychologists support the use of Ritalin on these children. And I think that we just need to do more research on these ADHD drugs and what they're doing to our children, the short-term and the long-term effects. And I do support this bill as far as prohibiting of teachers and personnel getting involved, making suggestions. But when you say that the teachers and the personnel can get involved in the observing the child in the classroom, that is very disturbing because of what's going on here in Fairbanks. We have psychologists here in the schools that support ADHD evaluation and the support of using psychotropic drugs on our children. That's a real concern right there, but I think this is a start in the right direction. I want to thank you, Senator Betty Davis. I know that you've been working on this bill for 3 or 4 years, and also, thank you, Richard, for bearing with me over the past couple of years. And I hope you take a serious look at the award-winning website, RedlandDeath.com, and these some of the tragic things that psychotropic gun has done to children. Not only that, it's caused death. And if you read some of these stories, you'll find out most of these recommended to put these kids on these ADHD drugs comes from a school teacher or a school personnel that is not in trained. And I don't think that our school teachers are trained to become psychologists, psychiatrists. They're there to teach the schools. And as far as the behavior of the child in the schoolroom, maybe we better get back to corporal punishment. I'm 59 years old. When I went to school, believe me, if you acted up in the schoolroom, your teacher took you out in the classroom, you went down to the gymnasium, you shot some baskets, you run around the school diamond. Or I went down there and you grabbed your ankles and you got about a half-inch thick board with holes in it. And I'll tell you what, you straightened up fast. We didn't have no psychiatrists, we didn't have any psychologists in our schools, and we didn't have any damn drugs pushing on our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turney.
And I would like to share this other thing I found in the USA Today might be important to this committee. The Food and Drug Administration approved the first skin patch treat to attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in children. The patch, which is designed to be worn for 9 hours, contains methylphenidate, which has been shown to help children, supposedly, with ADHD. The stimulant is Ritalin. The patch is made by Novan Pharmaceutical, Miami, in 2003. Nova submitted a 12-hour version of the patch to the FDA. The agency rejected it, recommended Nova test a 9-hour version. One of the positive things about this, you can take the patch off a little, Johnny, instead of having a side effect. And the number two is the kids can't snort this Ritalin up their nose. And like that's what they're doing here in Fairbanks, is crushing that stuff and snorting it up their nose. And that's one of the benefits of the patch. It's still a methamphetamine and it's still speed and it can't affect the heart. And so that's another concern. But anyway, I'll let others testify here. And once again, thank you.
Stuart Thompson?
Yes, can you hear me?
We sure can.
Good. My name's Stuart Thompson. I'm a citizen of Wasilla, actually, but I'm working here in Fairbanks right now. And I thank Senator Davis for bringing forth this bill, and I also thank the committee members for hearing it. My remarks are prepared, and I'll do it as rapidly as possible. I'm testifying in support of SB 48 passage. The aspect of the bill most relevant to your committee is that it just enforces occupational competence for the public good, the essence of occupational licensing. Government always gets a bad name when it isn't consistent in its regulation of businesses and professions. Occupational licensing is the government device to ensure a minimal level of competence in people practicing a craft on the public. The public understands the legitimacy of such regulation and the state bureaucracy to implement it. The conceptual flag for this is the public conviction that it's bad for people to practice medicine without a license. This bill makes a plain attempt to channel parents to people trained to give professional level of service and advice. It should be obvious that teacher and school administrator training is not designed to make such people competent to practice medicine, nutrition, psychology, psychiatry, or spiritual counseling. I wish to focus my testimony on why what is seemingly common sense needs specific law to enforce it. What we are facing is dramatization of the greatest collective failure humanity has, an incompetent ability to understand human behavior. This manifests in the almost universal fear of human irrationality, minimally psychological disorders like what's called attention deficit, and at its extreme form, madness. People who are afraid naturally grasp at anything to subtle confusions and threats caused by what they fear. So naturally, faced with inexplicable behavior of children, parents and others grasp advice from nearly any source they conceive to have repute. Thus, heavy pharmaceutical marketing and advertisements pushing the apparently scientific idea that man is a chemically motivated, stimulus response animal, exerts tremendous influence. A vacuum of understanding is filled with the alluring concept that Johnny's mental problems are caused just by chemical imbalances that are thus treatable with drugs. This directly tempts one of humanity's most dangerous weaknesses, lust for shortcuts. This lust has been preyed on since the days of snake oil salesmen and granny love potions, the progenitors of modern pharmaceutical companies. So out of fear, inadequate understandings, and lust for shortcuts, we have the source of child over-medication. The abuse of legal drugs in the over-medication of children should concern you almost more than any other form of substance abuse. Why? Because once a child or youth becomes convinced through adult or social encouragement that drugs are the simplest solution to becoming normal or happier, he's primed to explore illegal drugs using the same justification. Legality pronouncements hardly impress those already rebelling against robotically enforced authority. Let me close with a brief analogy to make this bill real to you. Let's say that the chairman of your committee perceived that a member chronically had a hard time paying attention to testimony and taking the time to study materials coming before the committee. Symptoms jumped on include a glazed look to his face and next to no interaction and involvement in the committee process. Let's say the chairman had the power to direct the member to get treatment for attention deficit. Otherwise, he'd face being reported to legislative ethics for refusing to get treated for a condition perceived to disable that representative from performing acceptably. How would you feel if this process was based on minimal understandings of committee chairman and legislative ethics personnel? I don't ask you to blindly agree with me. Don't just depend on the scientifically weak psychology experts who've replaced the tractability treatment fads of beatings, electroconvulsive therapy, and lobotomies with a fresh fad of psychotropic drugs. I ask you to use your own minds about what's at stake. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but I watched Super Nanny last night on television. I think she has all the answers.
Bring her on. Yeah.
I've been looking at committee members.
And each other.
What I would like to do, we have a long list of people that would like to testify, and so try not to repeat what the previous person has said so that we can kind of get going, because we do have some other bills that we'd like to hear today, too. So just see if you can help us out that way. Bob Hamilton? Oh, he hung up? Okay. Angela Tillery?
Hi, I'm Angela Tillery. Can you hear me?
We can.
All right. I am here to support Senate Bill 48, and I thank Senator Davis for getting it this far and having it before your committee. I am an Alaskan. I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I'm a business owner. I'm a church director. And because of the policies of the schools of recommending children be evaluated and placed on drugs, it was one of the main reasons that I chose to take my kids out of the school district and homeschool them. As a church director, I often find myself counseling parents because their children are out of control at school. The situation in our schools where teachers and administrators are recommending children be evaluated and placed on drugs such as Ritalin is a problem now and will become a greater problem if it's not addressed. This Senate bill addresses this situation and gives the control back to the parents where it belongs. The problem with teachers telling parents that, you know, their children need to be evaluated and that they may need to have some drug like Ritalin is that when they tell the parent to take them to the pediatrician, they send the parent along with this evaluation that they've given him. Well, the pediatrician doesn't have any physical test where he can say, oh, well, you know, we've done a blood test or we've done a urine test, and we can prove that this child does or does not have AD or ADHD. So what the pediatrician or the psychologist or the psychiatrist does is they take this evaluation that the teacher has given, this information, and this becomes the evaluation. And this is what they use to decide to put a child on drugs. Generally, they never test for food allergies or vitamin deficiencies or any other problem that could come along because those tests are expensive and the parents generally don't know to ask. What the pediatrician or psychologist does is they go by, well, let's test this child out at this dosage level and see how he does. Well, the child goes to school and the child is calmer. But most people that are on drugs are calmer. And the child, you know, goes back to the doctor, and they get a report back to the doctor of how the child is in school, and the doctor says, well, I guess we got a handle on that. And then we have a child that is being drugged on a regular basis. This situation is happening in our schools, not only for perceived hyperactivity, but for perceived depression as well. Children are being drugged by those who are supposed to be looking out for their well-being. I'm sure that you're aware that prescription drugs can be more dangerous than even some street drugs. But what you may not be aware of is that the FDA has put the strongest possible warnings just short of a black box warning label on drugs such as Ritalin, Strattera, Prozac, Zoloft, and the like because of the dangers involved with giving these drugs to children. Dangers such as suicidal and homicidal behavior. The U.S. military does understand the dangers of giving these drugs to children. Any recruit that comes in that's had an extended period of being on drugs such as Ritalin is ineligible for military service. At one point in the United States, 8 out of 13 school shootings that were committed by teens who were taking prescribed psychotropic drugs known to cause violent or suicidal behavior. Parents need to be better informed. The problems that their children have could be caused from a variety of sources. Their diet, food allergies, vitamin deficiencies, study problems, early onset of diabetes, heart disease, infections, even exposures to lead, pesticides, mercury, or manganese. These are all proven to cause hyperactivity or behavior problems in children. But unless parents educate themselves, they'll probably never hear about these. Our society wants a quick fix, a pill that will solve the problem. Just like the pill that, you know, you guys all want so that you can weigh 10 pounds less instead of actually doing the work of getting out there and exercising and having salad instead of a Big Mac. You know, those things take discipline. They take a little bit more work, and gee, it would be nice if we could all just take a pill. Whatever problems these children have, it is not that their parents have not given them enough drugs in their lifetime. The only reason the parents even think that they should give their children these drugs, or that it's even okay to give their children these drugs, is because of what the people that are in a position of authority have told them. But when those people that are in the position of authority are not giving out all of the possibilities and all of the options, they're doing a disservice to our children and to all of our futures. And that is the only thing that I have to say on it.
Okay. Thank you, Angela. Angela, I have a question for you.
Sure.
You, at the beginning, you said that you took your kids out of school because there was a recommendation that you put them on. Did anyone ever tell you that the kids couldn't come to school because unless they were on the drugs?
My child was not a child that was hyperactive. My child was a child that was disruptive because he had study problems. And, you know, rather than doing his schoolwork, he would want to talk to the other kids. And my kids were generally suspended from school, but they were not suspended from school in the sense that they were tossed out of school. They were suspended in this in-school suspension. So basically, they never went to class anyway. because of the problems that they had in the classroom. And, you know, the school would say, well, you know, we should evaluate him for attention deficit disorder.
Okay. And so the answer was no.
No, they never told me that he couldn't go to school, but they increased their abilities to oppress me and my children to the point where I chose not to take my kids to school there anymore, and I withdrew them. When it came to the point where my children were so disruptive that they would, you know, call the police on my children for disruptive behavior, it's like, well, you know, that's not helping me, you know. But every time that I would go to talk to them about it, you know, the recommendation was that I should get my child tested for ADD or ADHD.
Okay.
But there's no test for it. You know, and I've seen this kind of thing happening with even children as young as 4 years old in preschools in the school district.
Okay.
Where they're being told, oh, your child won't sit in circle. You should get him evaluated. Well, there is no evaluation other than what the school district provides to the pediatrician or the psychologist.
Okay. Thank you very much, Angela, for your testimony.
You're welcome.
I think because we want to make sure that we have enough time to vote on the bill, so I'm going to limit testimony to 3 minutes. And next is Steve Pierce with the Citizens Commission on Human Rights.
Hello, my name is Stephen Pierce.
Steve, we can hear you pretty loud.
All right, thank you. Yeah, so I'm the director of the Citizens Commission on Human Rights for Alaska, Washington, and Montana. And I've helped to put these laws into place in other states around the country. And there is a need for these. Basically, you know, SB 48 is not an attempt to disrupt the school or the teachers or what they're trying to do. It's an attempt to clarify their roles and also to let parents know that they're the ones that are responsible for the behavior of their children. And they, you know, that rightfully puts it in the parental control instead of the schools, which often tend to act as a referral system for, you know, psychologists or psychiatrists and for putting kids on drugs. So it's kind of a way to combat the marketing and to place the responsibility where sound science can be applied, where nutrition, where medical attention can be applied to the child, educational solutions as needed. And it's an effort to kind of level the playing field, and it's not an effort to really disrupt schools or that type of thing. Some of the testimony and some of the questions were around that issue. You know, you can't deny that there is a marketing campaign by the psychiatric industry to drug kids, as witnessed by studies that show, you know, a 540% increase in psychiatric drugging of toddlers. Yeah, as the woman before mentioned, as young as 4 years old. So, yes, there is a campaign to label kids, and these labels, you know, can be very discriminatory and stigmatizing to the child. So I think this bill can go, in its simplicity, it basically says teachers shouldn't be doctors and shouldn't diagnose. It puts a responsibility on parents. It does equalize the marketing aspect and hopefully can put the onus on the parents of schools to come to solutions that both agree on and the child benefits from as well. And I see that as a positive thing. So I thank you for hearing this bill.
Thank you very much, Steve. Rebecca Smalley?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can.
Yes, thank you very much for hearing my testimony today.
Go right ahead, Rebecca.
I'm a single mother of two teenage children here in Anchorage, and when my daughter was in elementary school, I had a parent-teacher conference with her fifth-grade teacher. And she'd had difficulties with education, the educational system being disruptive, or she wasn't necessarily disruptive. She just had her attention on other things. And so at the parent-teacher conference, the teacher had asked me if I'd had my daughter tested. And as I knew that my daughter was not the most ideal student, I inferred that she meant being tested for ADHD. So I went to a medical doctor the following week and had her tested. I had her tested for allergies and other pathological diseases, and she showed no signs of any of those complications other than high cholesterol, being that too many trips to McDonald's. So when I asked the doctor about ADHD testing, he told me that there was no physical or medical test for this. And in that time, I've since learned that the extent of what psychiatrists prescribe drugs for, not what a pathologist would categorize as a disease. Pathology being the study of a discovered disease, such as diabetes or candida, hepatitis, that sort of thing. There's no medical test for, quote-unquote, diseases such as depression, ADHD, bipolar, multiple personalities, and the like, as these diseases, quote-unquote, are only categorized by some other person's opinion of what is considered acceptable behavior. She had attention on other things. I mean, I could sit there and watch her draw or play Barbies or do something that she liked for an enormous amount of time, but when it came to other things, she didn't. And I don't think that that was necessarily attention deficit disorder. I would think that would be everything. Then she would not be able to keep her attention on everything, but it was just those things that she enjoyed that she paid attention to. As a mother of two healthy and ethical teenagers, I don't believe that a person's not who's not qualified to assess a person's mental condition as such should be allowed to require a parent to have their child or children undergo evaluation as a requirement to continue their education. Nor do I believe that a parent should be forced under expulsion or inspection, that they should have to drug their children to obedience. That's all I have to say on that one. I'll keep it brief. I ask you to please support SB 48 as I'm in agreement with these amendments.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Shirley Tuzraluk? I'm probably not saying that right, Shirley. Are you still there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. I'm calling in support of SB 48, and I thank Betty Davis for her work on this bill, and thank you also to other committee members. I chair the South Central Native Educators Committee. I serve on the board of the Alaska Native Education Association and co-chair the local planning committee for the upcoming National Indian Education Conference that will be held in Anchorage in October of this year. The primary reason that I support this bill is because of my awareness that Alaska Native students tend to be marginalized in the educational systems of this state. By marginalization, I mean that this ethnic group is identified as the one that is lowest on the positive indicators of success and highest in the negative indicators. This marginalization is largely due to a lack of understanding of how they view the world and how they think. This spills over into behaviors. If there's a lack of understanding of worldview, the likelihood that an Alaska Native student would be misdiagnosed is very high. It may be possible that the misbehavior may be due to a sense of alienation from the system and not a diagnosis of ADHD. Other ethnic groups are experiencing the same lack of success in the educational system, and therefore I would have the same concerns also about the lack of understanding of worldview. It's quite disturbing to me that there may be a possibility that a child would be placed on a drug rather than steps taken by the educators to learn how to serve them better. The same objections apply to behavioral evaluations. The potential for misunderstanding is high due to a lack of understanding. In my experience, they're quite intrusive. And I think the behavior evaluations that I have seen go far beyond the behaviors of the child into the behaviors of the family, which I would find not applicable to you know, what's happening in the classroom, and also there's the intrusive factor. So I'm in support of this bill, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Shirley. Sonia Kerr, or Kerr, maybe?
Hi, this is Sonia.
Go ahead, Sonia.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this bill. I am a supervising attorney with the Disability Law Center of Alaska, and just had a few comments on your bill. The Disability Law Center, as the name implies, represents many students with disabilities. We certainly do share the concerns of some of the folks who've already talked about misidentification and inappropriate medication of students. At the same time, I do have some concerns as to how the bill is written, not with its intent, but how it is written as it affects children with disabilities. Specifically, on page 2, paragraph 6, lines 4 through 7, that provision is the reference of students to the Office of Children's Services where parents refuse consent to psychotropic drugs. Many students who have come to our office have been inappropriately referred to the Office of Children's Services. Our suggestion is that with respect to children with disabilities who have special education IEPs, any such concern should be brought first to the child's IEP team. In other words, absent a life-threatening emergency, that any problem such as this is most appropriately first brought to the child's IEP team. A second concern we have is with respect to page 2, paragraph 2, lines 24 through 27. This section references disciplinary matters. As you may be aware, members, the students with disabilities under the special education federal statutes and state laws have some very unique special disciplinary procedures. In the way the language is written, and it's not a criticism, it's just a very confusing area of law altogether, we would urge the committee to look at a brief amendment that just says something to the effect that nothing in the section, in that section, is to be contrary to the federal education law as to disciplinary procedures. And the reference for that is 20 U.S.C. 1415K. A third part is the reference on
Sonia?
Page, I'm sorry?
Will you repeat that? 20 U.S.C. what?
1415K.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
That's okay. Another concern is on page 3, lines 22 through 28. There is a reference to the list of community resources, and that we don't have a problem with that per se, but there is a specific procedure for referring students who are already on IEPs or whose parents are entitled to independent evaluations under special education law. And in that situation, school districts are required to provide a list of information. So it's not a may, it's a requirement. And so in that one, our recommendation is to amend that section to add something to the effect of nothing in this section shall be done in a manner contrary to, and then the federal provision, which is 20 U.S.C. 1415B1 and 1415D2A.
D like in dog?
D as in dog, correct.
D-A?
D-2-A. And finally, we certainly are aware of many, many problems of misidentification and also over-identification, particularly of students with who are of minority status, and we share the concerns already expressed by the other speakers. At the same time, the federal special education law requires an affirmative effort on the part of a school district and the teachers to identify disabled children. That requirement is known as child find, and it is found at 20 U.S.C. 1401, as well as 1412, as well as 34 Code of Federal Regulations 300.11. Child find requires school districts to identify students with disabilities, and it would be our suggestion that there be language added to the bill somewhere, and I wasn't certain where, I'm sure Richard would know, that in makes it clear that there nothing in this bill is an attempt to undermine or you know, limit the responsibilities of school districts for child fine. And those are our comments, and we do appreciate the intent of the bill.
Sonia, would you get in touch with Senator Davis before this bill gets to the next committee, so that you can she can go over these things with you?
I will, and actually, I'm just drafting a letter to her now so that we'll have the references for her.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Next is. Did Bob Hamilton ever come back? Okay. Then we will. Is there anyone else on online that would like to testify? All right. Then we'll go to the into the audience here, and we have Mary Frances from ACSA.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Mary Frances, Executive Director of the School Administrators Association. As I listen to the testimony, we, as school administrators, principals in particular, we are concerned about certain aspects of this bill and would just address a couple of questions for the committee's consideration. This bill is not only about Ritalin. I think, for example, if a doctor has said that a student needs medication in order to be safe, both to him or herself and to others, and if the students and parents refuse to have the students take the medications, does that mean a principal would be required to allow that possibly dangerous student into the school? I think that's one question that the principals have and have shared with me. We feel there has to be a shared responsibility between the parents and the school administrator regarding the safety not only of the student themselves, but also other students in the building. I think a second question that principals have and have expressed to me is the section of the bill that says that we may not make a report of suspected neglect or abuse. And as you know, we are mandatory reporters. The teachers, principals, all school personnel are mandatory reporters, subject to criminal penalties if we don't report. Now, I did have an extensive discussion with Senator Davis's staff today, and he addressed many of these issues, but we just would like the committee to know that school administrators are concerned about the safety not only of an individual child, but all the other children in the building.
Any questions? Representative
C. Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 2, lines 5 through, or 1 through 3, that's that section 5. So that's prohibited action. School personnel may not recommend that a parent or guardian seek or use for a child psychotropic medication or psychiatric or psychological treatment. Do you find that problematic, or is that within the policy guidelines that the schools follow now?
I think the main concern that I've heard from principals through the chair, Representative Seaton, is that they do not want to be left in the position to be unable to remove a child from school attendance if that child's a threat to himself or to others. And I think there may be details in the bill that, as Richard told me when I discussed this with him, it seems the qualifier is the statement on line 3 or whatever it is that says, unless otherwise authorized by law. But I find, as we attempt to read the bill, a lot of confusion where it refers back to other legal statutes. And I think if, for those of us who try to implement law effectively in schools, we have a concern about it being somewhat confusing. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Not specifically on that section, but maybe I could follow up on another one. And so for you, it would be less confusing that if on page 1, line 7, after authorized by law, we would insert something like authorized by law, our specific school board policy, or the type C personnel or school psychologists, so that that was more clear of who could make those recommendations?
Right. Well, I think in the two sections that I reported, like the one that makes reference to may not report neglect or abuse, if that could be clarified that we are required and mandatory reporters, and it is not intended to suggest that school personnel should not report, because we are mandatory reporters. We're not even allowed to investigate, but we are required to report any suspected abuse. And I think that language, if it could be clarified, that would make the principals and school administrators more comfortable. The other issue I mentioned about a student not deciding not to take drugs, or parents not to take drugs that have been prescribed by a medical professional to keep that child safe and others the child comes in contact with safe. If that could be clarified, those two things I think are primarily the concerns of people who run the buildings.
Okay. I have now on the first page, on page 1, line 7, it says school personnel may not, unless otherwise authorized by law. Then if we, and then it's got these numbers, then you go over to here, except, you know, so in other words, the law requires you to do that now, and this says unless otherwise required by law. So I think that would cover you for the reporting, that part of it. Now, I'm not
sure
how. The
mandatory reporting.
Right.
Yes.
So because you're mandated to do that, and exactly. And it says unless otherwise authorized by law. So I think that's your wiggle room there where you can do that. And I'm, you know, Richard, do you want to have a comment on that? I see you waving your hand up there.
For the record, this is Richard Benavides again. Also on page 2, the lines 20, 29 specifically references the law that she's talking about.
Okay, thank you. All right. So that part, any other questions? Representative Gatto.
Is 4717020 the mandatory requirements for reporting?
I see people shaking their heads, yes. Okay. All right. We have lots of nods to the affirmative. Okay, Tony Dahlman. Sorry if I'm not pronouncing that. I think that's right. Okay.
I am Tony Jo Dahlman, and I am the special education coordinator for the Juneau School District. I was a school psychologist for 15 years and an administrator for 15 years as well, the last 15 years. And so I appreciate very much the concerns that you have been hearing, and obviously that drove the writing of this bill, which is suggesting that children cannot attend school unless they're on medication. And I think that that makes very good sense to say that that is not okay for school staff to make that decision. However, the way this bill is written is confusing. It is confusing to many of us. And we live in a time when children come to our schools with far greater differences than they ever did before. I've been in the field for 30 years, and I have seen things in the last 5 years I've never seen in the past. Children come to us with neurological disturbances, with biochemical disturbances, with differences that are extreme. Children are, some children come to us with an inability to control their impulses, to, when they're upset, they harm people. We're talking small children, not just teenagers. Children who bite, who kick, who scream, children who cover their ears and screech all day long and never stop. We have children who hear voices. We have children who come to us with extreme disabilities, not just attention deficit disorders. And it is within our purview to try to teach those children. That's our job, is to teach them in public school. We can't turn anybody away. It really is not okay for us to turn anybody away. It's our job to teach everyone. And we want to find a level playing field here where we can meet a law that says that please don't tell parents they have to put their children on medication. And at the same time, we want to be able to talk to parents meaningfully about their children's behavior. We want to be able to feel comfortable that no one is violating a law if they sit down and have a meeting with a parent to say, this is disturbing. This happened today. This is disturbing. This disturbed other children. Let's think together and collaborate together on how we can solve this. What can we do? And here's some ideas of things perhaps you can do as a parent. I do believe teachers are in no position to say you must consider medication or you should consider medication. They are in a position to say and describe the behaviors that they work with all day long. They work with children 6.5 hours a day. And in the classrooms, there's up to 30 children. And I believe they're in a position, in a very legitimate position, to say this behavior was disturbing. And this behavior is ongoing. It's intensive. We need to discuss it. And this law is very confusing about that. It suggests on page 2, lines 1 through 3,
yeah,
that perhaps, and I just don't understand the wording. I am not saying that it says one thing or another, but it suggests that perhaps those discussions could not legitimately take place. And that is not okay. There are truly children, and children with ADHD are not the children that I'm concerned about. And I know that many people out there don't want their children on medication, and that is their right and their privilege. It is, however, our job to teach them all day long and to manage children. And therefore, we need the opportunity to collaborate with people in a meaningful way. And we have to. We have, in our schools, when I started 30 years ago, we had one psychologist in this school district. We now have 5. We also, on top of that, have a counselor in every single school. On top of that, we have mental health professionals from mental health agencies that serve children in our schools every single day. And on top of that, we hire teachers who have special degrees and in working with children with behavioral disorders. However, it does appear that those teachers would not be able to make suggestions to parents about how to manage behavior. And maybe that isn't what is intended. However, it's very confusing the way it's written. And the concerns we have is the children who come to school who do behave extremely different. We call it excess behaviors. There is a good intention here, and that is that teachers should not be telling people that they have to get medication for their children. There is a good intention here that we should not close our doors to children based on medication. The language around referring children to the Department of Health and Social Services is confusing. It does, and maybe it's just me, I'm confused by it. My concern is that I believe it's the purview of the Office of Children's Services to distinguish and determine if, in fact, if there is a concern or not a concern. We've referred children before where they've said, well, that is not something we're going to investigate. That's their purview. It should not be ours to determine whether or not a child has reached that level of disturbance that would be considered neglect. It's a suspicion. It's a concern. I think the teachers do need to be trained not to tell parents to get medication for their children. However, I think there's a lot of language in here. It's pretty long, and it gets very confusing. And there's a lot of behavioral specialists in our schools these days, a lot of children with very extreme behaviors. And that's not to denigrate anyone or any children. in our district particularly, we feel very strongly that children belong, all children belong, and that every child belongs to the extent possible in their regular classrooms with typical peers and should have the opportunity to have those models. So we believe very strongly in children. We believe very strongly it's our job to teach them. We want to find a way that we can work collaboratively with everyone on how to do that safely and meaningfully for everyone. So that's our concern, that it's confusing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Gott.
Don't go away. Don't go away. Just a comment revolving around all of your testimony related to the affected child and none of it to the classmates. Can you make any comments about how some children can make at least some sort of an effect on their classmates by their behavior?
Madam Chair? I believe I did in reference that some children's behavior is so extreme that it does influence the learning of others, the inability of others to learn, maybe the safety of others, and that is our concern. We do need to address. We need to address the learning of all children in our schools, and if one child's behavior affects that learning of other children, we do need to address that.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a technicality, not for the witness, which we appreciate your witness. We're not in court to the testifier. but the time with 2 minutes left and caucus nearing, I would recommend if your disposition of the legislation is to entertain amendments or to hold, but I know you want to vote and Senator Davis wants to see the bill moved, although I don't know what the vote standard is. That you, when you do conclude, that you recess to the call of the chair, and then you can still bring up all the bills tomorrow, especially with some of the bill cancellations.
Yeah, and
just an idea.
Yeah. Thank you very much
thank
for your
you.
Testimony. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? We've got two more people. I tell you what, I think that's what we're going to do because we have a caucus at 5 o'clock, and I'm thinking if we can continue this in the morning.
And just so, Representative,
just briefly,
well, before you go off, and I know you want to see the bill moved, welcome to my world. In the committee, you had to leave to come to this one, which I'm here, which they just killed. So not your fault, but it still ticks me off. It was my number one priority. But off the record on that, I know I've had, I'm pointing at Representative Sisna, but I've already had two notes on potential amendments. So I would think that it's wise of the chair to do that rather than to try to smash it too, because I don't want to see your bill fail.
Brief it is. And is I'm going to recess for the call of the chair, and tomorrow we'll try to pull this together. And in the meantime, I would like
have
all of you to get your amendments ready, and then we'll vote on them tomorrow and see. We don't want to change the intent of the bill.
And if you, yes,
you know, that's the thing, because there's nothing wrong with the intent.
But
well,
we don't want an intended consequence.
Okay. I'd like to be able
and,
to look at them.
And there's two people.
We're on record.
For the people that are here that would like to testify, would you leave your telephone number or something with somebody so that we can get back with you and let you know when this is happening? Because I think we do need to do some.
They can give you a testimony.
Perfect. Yes.
Okay.
So we're adjourned.
Thank you.
There's no way I can
strike that. We are recessed to the call of the chair.
That's hard. I support.